The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. Custom software needs vary significantly. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. Harnessing the technical excellence of Bulgaria, MentorMate provides end-to-end software services in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer world-class care through technology. Learn more at MentorMate.com. I'm excited to continue the discussion on such an important topic with three wonderful panelists. So I'm going to start with a couple of quick intros. And what I want each of you to do as you give your intro on yourself and your organization, would you also answer the question, what does health equity mean to you and to your organization? And just because of the orders of my screen, Mary, I'm going to start with you. Would you introduce yourself and tell us, what does health equity mean to you?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Mary Hangen. My role is Vice President of Patient Outcomes and Experience at Be The Match. And for those of you that don't know who Be The Match is, we manage the most diverse marrow registry in the world, and we measure our success by the number of lives we save. So my team provides navigation services for patients. We provide different support throughout their cell therapy journey. And we also do industry-leading research. So we're really tackling improving access and outcomes for patients in multiple different ways. So we're located in downtown Minneapolis across from Target Field. Of course, we've been working remote for the last 18 months. But Be The Match was recognized by the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal in 2021 as a best place to work. So I feel extremely lucky at this point in my career to have found Be The Match. It's an incredible company, and we're doing mission-driven work. As far as what health equity means to our company, we want to make sure that every single patient gets the cell therapy and the care that they need. And we know right now that we're not connecting with all patients, especially patients of color. They're not making it through the process. So we want to make sure that we have equal outcomes for all. Everyone gets the cell therapy, the treatment that is necessary so that they have great outcomes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we'll probably talk more about that, because the work that Be The Match does, there are so many unique things that break down by race and gender and other criteria that make your work just unique. And then next I'd ask Kathy from Centricare, if you'd introduce yourself and tell us, what does health equity mean to you and Centricare?
All right. Thank you. I'm Kathy Parsons, Vice President of Population Health at Centricare. Centricare is a health system located in central Minnesota. We serve a couple of different small metro areas, as well as five or six rural areas. And we have spent a lot of time in health equity and health disparities. And what it really means to us is everything from equitable access to care, equitable outcomes to care, so more of that health disparity side. But the stuff in between is what really matters. You're not going to get health disparities reduced unless you can sort out what are the reasons that health disparities exist, which means you need to back up into the world of social determinants. And I appreciate everything Moshe said, because it really is about learning to listen to the communities and really deeply understand. We all got to where we got to, and our organizations did, because we knew answers and we were good at finding them. And this is really a situation where you need to listen. You're not going to solve health equity or disparities by throwing answers out there. We must listen. And so for us, health equity is about hearing and understanding our communities and the reasons that result in health disparities. And that's how we think about it.
Very well said. And I hear you on that. It can be said 100 times, should be said 100 times more. Listening to the communities we want to work with and be of service to is so fundamental. And then last but not least, I'll ask Dr. Michael Helgeson from Appletree Dental. I'm so glad you're here, because dental, I feel, is an area that it's so important, but we don't, I think, talk about it enough in its role in health equity. So if you would.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me again. I'm Dr. Michael Helgeson. My personal background is in geriatric and special needs dentistry as well as dental public health. And I'm one of the four founders of Appletree Dental, which is a nonprofit organization that operates 8 centers for dental health and then collaborates with about 150 community organizations to deliver care. And we call our model of care community collaborative practice. And it really builds on the theme you've heard from everyone. It's overcoming all of the barriers through collaboration. So our 150 community partners range from Head Start centers, where disadvantaged children and their families are getting educational services, K-12, so working in schools, working with behavioral health, working with group home partners, and then at the other end of the age spectrum, working with long-term care, assisted living, and really rethinking care. So it's really about bringing care to people where they are, where they live, where they receive education, or where they receive other health and social services. Most recently, we've been working with hospitals and medical primary care settings. We're in 3 hospitals and medical primary care settings where we're able to integrate and co-locate oral health services with other health services. So that's a little bit about Appletree and our mission. When I think about equity and health equity, I think about the difference between equality and equity. And equity is about tailoring what you do to overcome barriers, whether it's about tailoring to overcome language barriers or dealing with developmental disabilities and adapting. So it's not doing the same thing for everybody. It's tailoring and doing different things to meet all the different varying needs that unique population groups have. So it's about listening, partnering, and tailoring. And I'm just so excited because much of what we've accomplished over 36 years has been through collaborations with partners like 3M, Medtronic, Patterson Dental. The various industry partners that we have the experts and the expertise to teach us and help us. And I think the example you heard about getting $60 million of greater investment from the state of Minnesota through the work we did with 3M, that was their expertise and their help together with the expertise that we have kind of on the ground that enabled us to communicate better with the legislature, with the governor, both sides of the aisle, and actually accomplish something that we couldn't accomplish over 20 years of trying without the expertise that the members of Medical Alley have, all this value in their employees and in the knowledge and the systems and the problem solving skills that they have. So I'm just really excited to be part of the panel today.
I'm already hearing a common message or theme here of the listening, the tailoring to the needs of those individuals, that there's an opportunity for all of us to be in service or of service to people in need, just like we would do any customer or client or patient or whatever we end up terming it. Mary, I might start with you, and I want to set up kind of in a way of what are the challenges, and then Dr. Helgeson, I might come back to you on this topic of the collaborations, but Mary, could you talk about, you know, what are some of the largest challenges that you see in the communities that Be The Match serves relative to health equity today?
So some of the biggest challenges that we have is providing cell therapy to people of color. So we have a donor registry, and on that donor registry, if you're white Caucasian, like I am, I have a 77% chance of finding a donor on that registry. But if you're African-American Black, it drops down to 29%. So, you know, the chances of finding the match that you need to receive life-saving therapy is pretty low. And we're trying to change that. We're really tackling this disparity issue in multiple different ways. We are focused on increasing the diversity of our donor registry. So we're really connecting with the different communities. Again, that's part of building trust. There is distrust, obviously, in these communities for the healthcare community. And so joining our registry, people could be leery about. So we're doing a lot of education. We're connecting with the local communities as well and addressing it through education and outreach. We also have a couple of strategic initiatives that we're trying to change the paradigm of healthcare disparity, one of which is our program we're calling HLA Today. This is where when a patient is diagnosed with a blood disorder or blood cancer, they can get the typing needed at that point. So early in the process. And what this helps is it helps patients know what their options are, because sometimes, especially people of color, don't always get the referral. They don't always know about all the options that are available to them. So that's at the very beginning of the process. And then we're also, we're doing a lot of research. And one of our research studies is called Donor for All. This is a complete game changer. It's basically opening up the way that we do matching. It's setting different standards, and we're doing it through a clinical trial program. And this will allow more people to have matches on the registry. That number that I talked to you about before, the 29%, if everything goes the way we expect with Donor for All, the chances of a Black African-American patient having a match goes all the way up to 99%. So a huge, like I said, game changer for us. We're very optimistic and excited about what this could do for the patients and our families.
Oh, that's amazing. And it gets to, there's a question from the audience that I'll maybe pose in the background, but before we get to it, Kathy, I want to ask you about the challenges within the communities you serve. But there was an audience question of asking, like, is there a minimum benchmark or how do we measure health equity? And I suspect the answer, because it always is, it depends. You know, Mary, what you just laid out, right? There are some fairly concrete numbers given the kind of work you do. Kathy, I suspect it would be different for the work you're doing within Centricare, where some might be quantitative, some might be qualitative. Could you talk a bit about, you know, what are the challenges that you see within the Centricare community for health equity? And how do you think about the audience member's question of measuring progress on it?
So we often think about and measure, we start with, for example, cancer mortality rates. Let's say we start with that, and we back up into, okay, what gives us indications of the cancer mortality rates? What impacts that? Well, screening. And so then you have to look at the measurements of screening of people of color or screening of people who, you know, varies, whatever it is that is different. And then you have to back into the why. So this is where we get back to those social determinants of, you know, there is, I'll use colorectal cancer. So colorectal cancer has a much bigger impact from a mortality perspective on people of color. If you back into, you look at the rates of colorectal cancer screening, you see that those are significantly lower for people of color. Well, if you're not screening, you're not going to catch it early enough to cure it. And it is a curable thing if you catch it at the right stage. Well, then we have to back into why is that? And that always goes down to a few different things that sound like a few, and it's really quite a few. Are we listening? Do we have access to primary care at times when people can get in if they need to get off their job? We in healthcare have been very providers focused. You come in, you sit down in our hours, our time, and you wait. People who are, you know, working can't always do that anymore. And we need to adjust that. We also have to look at the long history of reasons why people might not trust the healthcare industry. We might want to look at costs or consider, is a colonoscopy the only way? It might be the gold standard, but it's not the only way. How else can we do it? So it's really a hearing and understanding what are the barriers to getting screening. And equally, you have to think about, if I can't put food on the table for my family, I am not worried about whether I can go have a colonoscopy or anything else. It's Maslow's hierarchy. How do we meet those basic needs that other countries have done a far better job of than we have? How do we make sure basic needs are met so people can actually think about these other things? So it's access. It's all the things everyone's talking about. And so we have to approach it from that perspective. So oftentimes someone will say, you have to get your cancer screening up. And we say, yes, and we must figure out how to deal with those things that prevent people from getting screened.
When you hit on something there that we've heard in other discussions that's so fundamental, often those of us in healthcare, we're very focused on the area we're in, the thing we know.
but healthcare is one part of a person's life. It's not the only thing. Dr. Helgeson, you talked about getting AppleTree Dental into the Head Start programs, into primary care clinics. And as long as I've been around healthcare, right, dental and healthcare have been separate things. It sounds like through those collaborations, you're crossing that chasm a bit. Could you talk a bit about that, of building those partnerships and breaking down those barriers that, as Kathy talked about, might prevent access?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, when we look at access to dental care, when people that are on Medicaid, which are low-income populations, when they're surveyed and asked, did you have a healthcare need that you couldn't meet? Doesn't matter if it's Minnesota or you pick any state in the country, dental is always by far and away the number one need that low-income populations have that they couldn't meet. And if you look at, you know, well, why is that? Well, you look at, again, it was mentioned, we tend to have a provider-centric frame. You know, we set our hours, we locate ourselves, and we expect people to do all of these behaviors to come to us to get the services that we know that they need. And often they don't know that they need, or again, in their priority list in life, it's not on their list. So one of the things that we did is reframe the question, is how do we create an oral healthcare delivery system that targets the population groups, the geographies, the people that we know have the highest rates of dental diseases and often have the least access, the least knowledge about oral health and the things that can prevent oral health and things like that. So over our 36 years, and we started at the old age end of the age spectrum in geriatrics. I mentioned that was my background. How do we get optimal oral health care to people in long-term care? And the answer was, well, let's work with the nurses. Let's work with the long-term care providers. Let's work with the geriatricians. Let's find out what else is going on in those settings and figure out how can we best integrate oral health prevention, delivery of services, and developing mobile systems. So really changing, instead of expecting people in long-term care to come to a dental practice, literally create, design, build mobile delivery systems, software systems, new staffing models, and actually bring the care into the setting of long-term care where you're working hand in hand with physical therapists, occupational therapists, nurses, things like that. Same thing with Head Start. A lot of those families, single moms, very little access to public or private transportation. Again, in their hierarchy of needs, taking their kids for a dental checkup if they don't perceive an issue is not going to fall high enough. But if we work with the Head Start Center and we can screen every 100% of those children there, identify the children that have risk factors, educate every single child, we can get to a point of 100% access, zero disparities, and that's our goal. But we have to do that by rethinking everything we do and delivering it in different ways. And the beauty of Medical Alley and the folks that are on this is that's the kind of creative thinking, problem solving that all of these organizations do every day. And often the folks like us that are in the nonprofit sector don't have that level of expertise in how to engineer these solutions. And I think for AppleTree, to the degree that we've been very successful, it's been through collaborations with and technical support from all of the other kinds of health and social services and medical, you know, providers that are out there.
That's very interesting. Yeah, what I hear you describing in some ways, if I put on a business hat, took off my nonprofit hat for a sec, was, you know, re-engineering experience and process and then building distribution networks to get to people who need the help and get to that 100% access, 0% disparity. It's a great way of connecting nonprofit and for-profit. Mary, there's a question from the audience that was a follow-up to a comment you had made that kind of builds on what Dr. Helgeson said, which was about outreach and education. The questioner was wondering, you know, what have you found to be most effective or highly effective when you're trying to target disparate populations and engage them, listen to them, and adjust the work that you're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what's worked best for us is to make sure that our employee population looks like the patients we are serving. And so we've had to take a hard look at ourselves over the last few years because we're very Minnesota focused, getting the diversity from a patient or from an employee perspective. And we all looked the same, you know, we looked like me. So we've done a lot of work there so that we have employees that can connect with the different communities. We've got a ways to go, but we're making some great inroads there. Also, we've been putting employees in local markets. So they understand the markets, they're part of those communities. I think it lends to a better listening session, better understanding of each other and getting kind of to the core issues. But it has to be a long-term game. We can't just jump in and jump out. I mean, we need to stay in these communities and build long-term relationships. And that's really what our focus is.
And I might just stay with you for a sec and then go around the room. I have to ask the question of how has the pandemic affected our work? I'll say from Medical Alley Association's perspective, being able to do conversations like this, simple thing has been a game changer to bring people in that would have been more difficult to bring in person, have deeper conversations. But what has that meant for the work you're doing in your health equity work? And Mary, starting with you, how has it changed Be the Matches efforts to engage in the communities?
Yeah, well, we were very focused again here in Minnesota. We were in the office. We've been working from home for the last 18 months. But I will tell you, we had the best year ever. And again, we rate ourselves or we measure ourselves by number of lives saved. During the pandemic, we had to get marrow cells to patients around the world or cells from around the world to us. And so borders were closed. I mean, we had to work with consulates. It was incredible, the dedication of the employees at Be the Match to make the impossible possible. And we did not miss one time when a patient was getting their pre-regimen to you know, which is chemo, et cetera, to prepare for the bone marrow or peripheral cell therapy. We did not miss one time getting them the cells that they needed. And that was 10,000 patients. So what we proved was we could work remotely and do a really, really good job and still stay connected and meet our patients' needs. I will tell you though, with all the unrest that came at the same time, I think, you know, that was harder to have conversations when we were all remotely. And there were kind of, you know, layers of things happening between the pandemic and all the unrest that was locally happening here. So as I mentioned before, we really are now focused on, I think the George Floyd issue really brought forth the need to really look at our employee base, look at our practices, who we partner with in the community, and just really be crystal clear on helping to advance our DEI, our strategy. And we're making some inroads there.
Dr. Heblison, I'll ask you the same thing, because I know dental was particularly hard hit during the pandemic, partly the nature of the way the medicine is practiced. How did it impact your work and what have you seen come out of it that maybe has been a positive for your work?
Sure, that's a great question. And we were particularly impacted given that we work in the airway. Yeah, we know COVID is transmitted in that way. Maybe I'll shout out 3M again, their personal protective equipment training and things like that. I think, you know, dental practices have had universal precautions for years and years. And so I think our preparation for dealing with the type of thing with the pandemic was pretty good. But again, thinking about all of the health and safety issues in our offices and being able to evaluate, you know, the airflow and air exchange and all of these methods of keeping us safe and keeping our patients safe. And again, our partnerships across, you know, industry and with our medical providers were the key to figuring out how to adapt, upgrade, and create work safe work environments and keep going. The Get to Yes group, just channeling what you were saying about your group and being able to get together, build trust. The Get to Yes group brought together the state's critical access dental providers. So the groups like AppleTree, Hennepin Healthcare, Children's Dental, the backbone of meeting the needs of underserved populations. We met every single week, something we had never done. And we did this using these Zoom technologies. And we were sharing everything. You know, where are you getting X? You know, how are we getting approval to do teledentistry direct to patients and working with state agencies? So we worked more closely, built more trust, solved more problems, and bonded together in a way that we hadn't done before. And then again, with 3M's help and the development of this white paper, we were able to simplify our messages, make them very compelling, convey them to legislators and to the governor and the governor's, the Department of Human Services. We were able to work together and accomplish things that we hadn't been able to do for several decades. So, you know, when you get a big challenge, sometimes it forces you to really pull together and do things in new ways. So I think we're coming out of it with a much stronger group, much better organized, and we're going to be able to team up with more partners going forward and really work to address these underlying disparities. One just final note, you know, we've talked about the need to have our staff and our clinicians look like the populations we serve. And another project that we've done with 3M is we've launched something called the Career Equity Project. We're real excited about that. The dental profession is the least representative of the health professions. It was stated that if every single dental school position in the United States and Canada were filled with an underrepresented minority, it would take a decade for them to get to their appropriate percentages in the oral health profession. So we have a really systemic issue that the right people are not getting into the oral health profession. So again, with technical help from 3M, we've launched a project where we're linking with local high schools near each of our 8 centers. We're working with community colleges, and we're trying to create paths where we can provide all the help and support that underrepresented kids from high school all the way through to becoming whatever level in the oral health professions they want. But it's a career support system where AppleTree as a nonprofit is acting like the family that others who maybe get those opportunities, we're acting like those family supports for those kids so they can get to wherever they need to get in the oral health profession. So very excited about that.
Yeah. And I'm now hearing a second theme of the need to truly go upstream to address these issues, right? It's not just building a new program and putting a metric in place. It's re-architecting our organizations and the way we structure ourselves and our activities to really make that impact. And Kathy, I'd ask the same of you. And, you know, CentraCare being in the middle of the state, you have an urban population, you have rural populations, and a very large geographic area that you serve. How did it affect CentraCare? And what came out of it that you go, we learned something or we did something really positive as a result?
In so many ways, as the pandemic hit initially, it's not gone, we're living that right now. But as it hit, we realized that we have a fairly large refugee population in the St. Cloud area. And we realized we have a community population wellness team that are people in and among that community who help us to communicate and get word out. We had people going door to door, but ultimately we started to use different technologies to help get education out. There was one night we had 500 people from the Somali community on one call where we were answering questions, and they were telling us where their challenges were. Particularly, we have meat packing plants in the area. And finally, we said, wait a minute, got to go upstream. And so we actually reached out to the meatpacking plants and started to provide both testing and vaccines there. And we're working in ways with employers that we never did before to say, you know, here, this can help you and it can help your employees and it helps us get word out. We landed on Somali TV several times. And actually, that was shown in Africa. And we actually had a couple calls from there, you know, saying, now what do we do? Because we did a lot of education. We are doing many things differently now. And of course, the murder of George Floyd, you know, just exemplified all the different things that are wrong and how we need to amp up our game in many different ways that have already been referred to. We really did start to fundamentally rethink how we reach people and how we listen. Our mission is to listen and serve, guide and heal. And we really had to back up to that, listen, serve and guide and help people understand and take people where they are because there are long histories of reasons why there's mistrust or misunderstanding. And so we are, and then we too, why is it we have a pretty good process of hiring people of diverse backgrounds, but we don't keep them as well as we should? Well, we had to look internally and say, why is that? What is it about our organization that causes people to say, yep, thanks, but I'm moving on? And so we've had to internally look, you can never do this work only externally. You have to, and as everybody said, look internally and say, what do we need to do in our own house before we can pretend to help everyone else? So I think it is all that has been said. We are really dedicated to vaccines. Sometimes we'll go somewhere and we only do eight, but we've listened to them. We've heard their concerns. We've addressed their concerns and we accept where they are. And I think that we're doing that more and more with all sorts of different services that really will help long-term solve health disparities. This is not a short-term game. And we have to be in it for the long haul, and it has to be fundamental change to how we think and how we act and how we reach out to different communities and how we partner with businesses of all sorts to say, what can we do together differently?
I mean, I think that's a really good call to arms or call to action for all of us of the looking internally, right? If we're going to say that we're leaders, whether leaders in our organization or in the community, we have to be the ones to say if there's something wrong, it is on us to understand, to listen, and to work on it, not on someone else to fix it. And so, Kathy, I appreciate you bringing that up. There was a question from the audience wondering, can you shed any light on what you've learned so far relative to the BIPOC staff retention issue and some challenges that CentraCare is working to overcome?
Absolutely. So one of the things we learned when you are in a smaller group, you know, you don't have those connections. You know, our health system is a large sprawling space and people don't see each other. And if you're in an area and you don't have other people who have anything in common with you related to, you know, your background, your culture, it's really hard to stay. You want to be with people that you feel like you're connected to. So it's about help. Part of it, not all of it, has been about helping connect people and then helping all of our staff to be more welcoming. I will say that Stearns County, where our biggest organization is located, there's large families and people have all sorts of connections already. There's a lot of people not looking for new friends. And so how do we help people make those connections? How do we become a place that is full of additional and new and different connections? So ERGs, the employee resource groups, those have been helpful. But even as we bring people in from the local technical college, you know, they've been in one place, how do we bring them into another and keep them connected to each other, even if they're not physically together? And of course, technology helps us stay together differently now. I say that works in St. Cloud. Broadband continues to be an issue in rural, and we do serve a large rural population. And there are significant health disparities in rural populations. So we're also tackling how do we give care differently and how do we connect people? You know, that came clear in both education as kids were sent home and then couldn't, either they're rural and they couldn't afford to have the access, internet access, or they didn't have the money to afford it. So that's still, infrastructure in this country is still a very big issue.
Well, and that gets at, there was a question from the audience about the role of telehealth. And I've heard from many organizations, both rural and urban, what you just said of telehealth can provide a means of access, but it also can create new forms of inequities because high-speed internet is not evenly distributed or equitably distributed. And so while it can be part of a solution, it's not the solution. I might now shift to a slightly different topic and kind of, I'd call it the meat of this discussion, which Dr. Helgeson, you've alluded to a few times, the power of partnership, the collaborations. You know, in the nonprofit world, we often say no money, no mission. And right, if you can't pay the bills, if you can't keep the lights on, a lot of the rest of it is challenging. But once you get past that point, there are so many other things that we need to do as organizations. And you've talked a little bit about working with 3M, Medtronic, others on process improvements, things you've done. Could you just maybe go into that a little bit more of some of the work you've done there and how those sorts of collaborations have been helpful? And then Mary Kathy, what I'm going to ask you about is kind of building on that. What are the things we as a community, as industries, could do to better support the community actors that are out there? So Dr. Helgeson, if you would.
Sure. I would just make a general observation that a lot of the nonprofits that are really sort of the boots on the ground, for lack of a better term, you know, that are really close to the underserved populations and have some of the best connections with them are relatively small organizations. And so they do not have people with expertise in project planning and, you know, implementation and marketing and how do you, and advocacy. You know, how do you work together? A lot of times we're small, isolated voices, you know, lots of great ideas, but we don't have the business skills to convert those good ideas into scalable solutions. And all the folks on the medical alley are rich with experts. You know, they've got real richness in their employees. And those employees, if they are given an opportunity to partner, can be unbelievable catalysts that can help the folks that are on the ground really scale up things at work, or conversely, stop doing stuff that just isn't working. To be able to analyze, you know, what you're doing and to be able to systematically improve and scale it up. This is what the larger scale businesses, this is what they're doing. And I think if they can cross, you know, between, you know, sort of the private and the nonprofit sector and help leverage all of that knowledge and expertise, it is much more than the money. You know, if you give the folks on the ground the tools, they will generate the revenues and so on. So I think that's a huge theme. And I mentioned the, you know, the Get to Yes group, which yielded a huge public policy investment that was 20 years, you know, in the making. But by having 3M's global expertise, you know, they work on advocacy in countries all over the world. And to have that level of expertise coaching this team of critical access providers, you know, meant all the difference between another year of failure, you know, at the legislature and the biggest success we've had, you know, in several decades. And similarly with our career equity project is another example where, you know, we had folks there really helping us study the landscape, you know, what's going on with STEM, you know, programs, what's going on with community colleges, who are the organizations that we can best partner with, what best practices are already out there, and really leapfrog us in an 8-week intensive planning process with volunteers from 3M. We created a comprehensive plan that we're carrying out right now. We already are piloting with some students in high schools in just a few short months. So I hope everybody that's on this recognizes that it's not your cash, you know, which is in short supply, and obviously you can use it in your own organizations, but it's all of that expertise that your employees have. And if you can connect them, it will be meaningful for them. They will enjoy their job in your company better, and they will be making a difference to address some of these systemic problems that we are all, you know, in it to try to solve together.
Very well said. And I would echo and amplify at those small organizations that are on the front lines. They've been listening to the communities. They quite often have good ideas on what needs to be done. Scaling those ideas up is a different thing. And that's what, for those of you in the audience, many of your businesses are so expert in. taking the good idea and scaling its impact, and that's a benefit then to all. Mary, I'll ask you, you know, in the work you're doing, Be the Match is a nonprofit organization. Where are you seeing those collaborations create value in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is connecting. And so I think Michael talked about that. Sometimes we don't know what other groups are doing, but we've connected with a lot of other nonprofits, especially in the advocacy space. We passed or were part of passing 7 bills last year to help our patients in different ways. Sometimes it's access to care. But it was working with the American Cancer Society, working with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, just really trying to understand where we could leverage each other, where we have common interests, and then how can we go to do different things together. So I think that's a really important point. But then connecting, because even as we're talking, I'm thinking, boy, we could leverage each other on so many different things. It's just trying to understand what's out there, what different groups are doing, and then how can we work together to make a big difference, especially in our local communities.
Kathy, I'll ask you the same. Centricare, obviously a nonprofit health system and a large organization. Maybe you have a different take on it.
Well, no, I would agree with all that has been said and maybe add, we want to avoid silos. There is a lot of work being done by a lot of different folks. And to Dr. Helgeson's point, when you can come together, you can accomplish so much more than individually. And so trying to really talk to talk to the communities you're working with. And yes, the people, the knowledge, it's that in-kind stuff. Sometimes it's space. People have no place to do something what they want to do. So, you know, it's a lot of different things. And occasionally it's cash. But I think that that's not the single biggest thing. It really is about how do we think differently about what we're trying to accomplish and then prioritize. Because there really are some things that sound like a great idea, but what's their ultimate impact? Maybe not as much as we would think. So helping to prioritize what will make the difference and avoiding pet projects to get to what's the real impactful project. And I too hear of lots of opportunities even in as we're talking here, but really work with your local communities, your local boots on the ground, and when it comes to health equity, your local health system, who pretty much should have some good sense of what it is that, where are the biggest gaps that really need to be filled. And remember that those social determinants are really so critical to help solve as a nation, but even just locally and internal communities. I'm now part of a mental health steering committee in our community that involves judges and lawyers and the correctional system and mental health providers to say, how do we not cause more issues where we don't need to? How can we take care of people with mental health issues differently? And that's a place where we see big disparities too. So it's really just reimagining what could be.
Oh, well said. And I love that, that so much of what happens in or to healthcare is either a result of what's happening somewhere else in a person's life or impacts somewhere else in the person's life. But far too often, we've had silos. And maybe as we're coming into the end here, I might ask that as maybe a final question relative to silos. You know, what sort of work are you doing or are you seeing as beneficial to break up those silos? You know, Kathy, you just talked about the work with the judges and other groups. Dr. Helgeson, you talked about the Get to Yes Coalition. So maybe Mary, I'll give you the last question and ask, you know, how does Be the Match see the different organizations that are out there, the different groups that you might interact with, and how do you break down those silos for your work?
Yeah, well, we are starting an initiative, both internally and externally, that's going to be focused on reducing healthcare disparities. So we have a large network of transplant centers that work with us, and we want to really get physicians to do a pledge that they will focus on this work. And we also want local partners as well as national partners. So we really, Be the Match, our mission is to democratize cell therapy. We know we want to make sure that every patient has access and the treatment and the right outcomes. And so we have to do something bigger. what we've been doing has been somewhat small. So we want to do something bigger, both internally and externally, just to start making these connections. And so I love what Mojay talked about as well with linking the for-profit and nonprofit. I think even this group on this phone or on this webinar could also benefit from this if we start joining arms together to really make a difference locally and then hopefully nationally as well.
Very well said. And I might just summarize the themes then that I heard from the group and kind of put for all of us the call to action. You know, health equity includes looking inside ourselves and our organizations, that partnering, especially between nonprofits and for-profit organizations, can bring different expertise to the table and can help to scale up these impactful ideas. And that innovation is not just new technologies, it's also the processes, the systems, the policies, the way we go about our work, and that all of these things together are what are going to help us get to a more equitable healthcare system. I want to say thank you to all three of you for sharing your time, very busy, sharing your expertise, and also participating in this community. We talked a lot about busting silos, and I think that's really the power of this community, that we care enough to stand together and say, okay, I've been doing something, but you could do it better, or we could do it better together, and not be so internally focused. So thank you all. Thank you to our audience for participating today. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And as always, thank you for being a part of the Medical Alley community. Have a good one.